Hey guys, I'm Zach.
And I'm Lucas.
And you're listening to episode 5 of Tales from the Bunk Bed, a bi-weekly pop culture and entertainment podcast hosted by two brothers.
That's us.
Covering all the things that kept us busy throughout our childhood. We discuss why we loved it then before deciding if it holds up today. Thanks everyone for listening to our fourth episode, which covered Gremlins and the greater Christmas horror, which was a lot of fun. That was a good time talking about some bloody Christmas movies that we like a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And this week we're going to keep it in the holiday theme, as this is our last episode before Christmas and the whole holiday break that everyone's going to be on. So we're going to be talking something a little more family-friendly today. And we're going to keep it pretty brief this episode. We're not going to run too long.
Try not to.
Yeah. And also, before we get into everything, I just want to put this up front that in 2 weeks, because it's going to be right after Christmas, we're not going to have a regular episode. You'll know at the end of this episode, I won't pick a topic. We're going to try. I'm not even going to make this promise because it's going to be a hell of a 2 weeks for us at work and everything like that.
Yeah.
We're going to try and just put up a favorites of 2017 episode right after Christmas, where it's just like an hour of the two of us going back and forth about whatever it is that we loved in this year, especially because there's such a shit year.
Yeah, talking about some of the stuff that came out or that we played or whatever before this podcast started.
Yeah, because we only started at the beginning of October, so there's a lot of stuff that happened this year that we haven't gotten a chance to talk about. So
9 full months.
Yep, so that should be fun and a good way to look back on a lot of different types of things from this year. We might also, again, this is time permitting and what's going on, we might put up like a half hour or 45 minute Star Wars spoilers review after we see that too. But that's a play it by ear thing. I'm not going to promise that. If we see it, we got some free time and we just feel like sitting down and talking.
Do you have tickets for it yet?
Yeah. We're both going Thursday night.
All right.
So we're seeing it right away. I'm sure we'll both go again with our dad before the weekend's over anyway. So we'll have seen it multiple times, I'm sure, by the time we decide to do that, if we decide to do that.
Probably,
Yeah, I just wanted to let you guys know that's what's coming up. So this is our last like official episode for the year where we have a topic and everything that we've decided, and then we'll pick right up either the first week of the new year, second week, again, depending on schedules, and I'll pick a topic at the end of our best of, and we'll go from there. So with that, we'll move into this week's episode, where we don't have too much for current events, even though I've kind of been watching a lot, and there's stuff going on. We just had, well, two movies, but they're connected with each other that we felt we should talk about before getting into the main part of this show. One of them is a new movie that just it officially released last weekend, went wide this weekend, and the other movie is the movie that it's based off of. It is Tommy Wiseau's The Room and James Franco's The Disaster Artist, which is the movie about the making of The Room. I guess we could give a quick intro on The Room and our thoughts of it. Like, yeah. I don't want to go too in-depth on this.
Throw out some first impressions or something.
Yeah, because, like, we don't need to dissect The Room for everybody. If you want to hear me talk deeper on that, we did just talk about it on my other podcast. But, so The Room is this movie that came out in 2003. It's, what would you call it, like a psychological romance drama or something like that?
I mean, that's what they were aiming for. That's not necessarily the note that it hit.
Oh, exactly. I mean, Tommy Wiseau calls it a black comedy nowadays, now that it's grown this huge cult status. He tries to play some people at times and say that he was going for a lot of what is obviously just mistakes.
Yeah, they kind of reference that in The Disaster Artist, too.
Yep. So The Room, it's just this, it's a simple movie. I don't even want to describe the plot necessarily because it doesn't matter. Let's just say it's heralded as possibly the worst movie ever made, one of the worst movies ever made.
The best worst
movie. Yes, the best worst movie ever made. So, like, you came over last Sunday, not yesterday, a week ago. I had my roommates, a couple friends as well, and we watched The Room.
Yeah.
Man, that was an experience.
I mean, for starters, the first, like, 25 minutes, there's three sex scenes.
Yep.
And it's kind of funny because your buddy John showed up late And he showed up probably 20 minutes late. And we go, oh, don't worry, John. You didn't really miss much. Just a couple of sex scenes. And then literally 30 seconds later, another one started.
Well, that was the best. He walked in the middle of the second sex scene, which is great. It's barely 10 minutes. Like, you're like maybe 15 minutes into the movie at most. And he walks in. He's like, what the fuck are you guys watching? And like, I've been telling everyone I wanted them to come over and watch like a really bad and dumb movie. But I myself didn't really know about anything going in. So he can't, and he's like, what is this? And I was like, it's The Room. It's supposed to be like the worst movie ever made. And so like, we're all laughing, and I didn't know how he'd get into it, because then literally almost immediately after that, you know, you get a cheesy line of dialogue or two. We all laugh. The third sex scene starts.
Which is the sex scene where they reuse some of the same shots from the first sex scene.
Yep, just a different song. And John looks at me. He's like, are we watching a porno? And I just looked back at him, and I was like, honestly, 25 minutes in, I've never seen this movie. I don't know, maybe. It could be. Because as of right now, we are averaging more sex scenes than regular scenes in this movie. And that's something for even a Skinamax.
They were
movie.
On pace for every 10 minutes there was a sex scene.
Yeah. Well, then the best part is after that, like, first 40 minutes, because I think you get the fourth one at, like, the 40-minute mark or something like that.
Yeah, with the two random friends.
Yep. You don't get another sex scene in the movie. No. That's it. They front-load this movie with all the sex, and then after that, it's just a ridiculous movie. I mean, you just have characters showing up unannounced. Maybe you get a character name, maybe not. Characters show up for a scene or never brought back. Like the drug dealer with Denny, Chris R.
Chris
and I
R.
love that he has to be Chris R. He can't just be Chris. There's no other Chris's in the movie, but it's Chris R. and just crazy stuff like the girlfriend's mother being over. And it's like, I got the test results today. I definitely have breast cancer. And then that never gets brought back up for the entire movie. It's nonsense. It's this independent film that these two guys, Tommy Wiseau and Greg Sestero, even though it was Tommy Wiseau who funded the whole thing, wrote, directed, and starred in it. Sestero was his best friend, who also co-starred as Mark and did a lot of the other work for it. They couldn't make it in L.A., and they came up with the idea to just make their own movie. And Tommy wrote this script, and they made this insane thing that nobody thought would ever even end up seeing the light of day, and then over the years has just gathered this huge cult audience. Like, there's live screenings, people go crazy for this movie. Tommy's like an all-star now. He goes to screenings, he throws the football around.
Yeah, that's crazy. Apparently they do like at least one screening a month in LA, which is kind of wild.
So I just found this out, and I'm gonna have to go out there and do this one time, because both of my co-hosts and my other podcast live right outside of Cleveland. One of the theaters in Cleveland used to do a screening every month. This is what Tyler was telling me. And they stopped in like the recent years because it had kind of waned off. You know, it wasn't really as relevant as it was. And they just announced with The Disaster Artist that starting in January, they're going back to the monthly screenings of The Room. So I want to go out to Cleveland and check it out with them. Because from what I've heard, those screenings are a blast once you've seen the movie.
Yeah, they showed like some of the footage in The Disaster Artist. There's people like laughing and spitting lines out and throwing spoons, I still don't really understand.
So spoons, I didn't understand it first either, because we were all, I mean, obviously we had a group of people. We're not paying that close attention to details in this movie. We're just laughing at what's going on.
It was our first time watching.
So I guess in the room, like the actual room in the movie, the physical room, there's a framed plastic spoon.
Really?
On the wall. Just, yeah. I have to go back and check this because I didn't catch it either. I wasn't even thinking about it when watching it. But yeah, there's a framed picture of, or a framed plastic spoon on the wall. And there's no explanation for it. Nobody knows why. So that's where
it's probably in like every scene too.
Well, that's when they throw the spoons, is whenever it shows up on screen, you throw spoons at the screen.
Oh.
That's where that comes from. Stuff like that. So it's just become this whole interactive experience. And there's we won't go too deep in this, but there's something to be said for, even if it's a poorly made movie, if it brings all these people together and you have a blast watching it, how bad is it in the grand scheme of things?
Yeah.
Like on a technical level, yeah, it's poorly made. The acting is shit. The writing is pure dog shit. They infamously shot with both a 35 millimeter and an HD camera. So they had two cameras side by side. So everything is out of center. Nothing is framed right. Which is nuts.
That's
just like goofy things like that just make this one of those most fascinating movies ever made. And it's a blast. Like, we had so much fun. We were laughing the whole time. Like, just hysterically laughing. We've been quoting it since. You, me, all my friends. Like, everybody is just quoting this movie so much now. Yeah. So anyways, how's the sex life? There's so much great stuff in this movie. It's ridiculous. And Yeah, so I guess moving on for that, because we don't need to linger on the room for that long. All I have to say is, if you like to watch good, bad movies, get a group, and you want to see The Disaster Artist, because I do think if you're interested in The Room and you want to see The Disaster Artist, you should try and see it before you see The Disaster Artist.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Yes. So I would do that. It's a lot of fun, and you'll have a blast, and then go right away and see The Disaster Artist, which is a brand new film. It is directed by James Franco, and it stars James Franco as the titular Tommy Wiseau. And it's all about the making of this crazy movie, which is based on the book, which Greg Sestero, who plays Mark, co-wrote. I forget who the co-author's name is, but they wrote the Disaster Artist book, which James Franco like immediately bought up, because he's like, yeah, I see myself and Tommy a lot, and decided to make this movie. And so there, I mean, it's nothing new for Hollywood to make movies about making movies. And yeah. Hollywood always loves a movie about making a movie. It's one of those things. It's like Hollywood loves itself. Birdman winning Best Picture. Stuff like that. It's like Hollywood loves a movie about itself. But where The Disaster Artist kind of stands apart from a lot of those, it's because it's very akin to Ed Wood, which is a movie I know you haven't seen, but is a very popular Tim Burton movie about a similar filmmaker, Ed Wood, who... until Tommy Wiseau was always considered maybe the worst filmmaker of all time, and his film Plan 9 from Outer Space is considered maybe the worst movie of all time. And Ed Wood is about the making of Plan 9 from Outer Space and what was going on in Ed Wood's life at the time, and how he was this like really nice, earnest person who just thought he was making good movies. He thought he could do it, and he thought what he was making was good, and it wasn't. But it's a really good movie. That's basically what The Disaster Artist is. But even more than that... It's this incredible story that, like, and when people keep saying, like, James Franco saw himself in Tommy Wiseau and put a lot of himself in this movie, it's so clear, because the greater message of this movie has nothing specifically to do with Tommy or Greg or any of the specific people involved in The Room. It's just about, one, art and making art, like, what it takes to make art, like, why these people do it.
Yeah.
And then also the mentality of an artist. Like, one of my favorite lines in this movie... And I'm sorry if anyone considers this a spoiler, but there's the line where they're at lunch, on break at lunch, and it's right after the old lady who's playing the mother-in-law passed out.
Yeah.
And Dave Franco is Greg Sestero, looks like, asks her, he's like, why are you here? You drive, you live like 15 miles away. You get up at 5 a.m. every day to get to set. Why are you here? And she just gives this simple answer. And she's like, we're actors. Like, this is what we do. The worst day on a movie set is better than the best day at any other job.
Yeah.
And it's like that simple philosophy is basically what this whole movie is. Why is Seth Rogen's character there the entire time? Like, why do these characters not just why do these people not just walk off set? Like, when you see how this movie was made and everything like that, how did these people just stick around? What was it that kept them from just walking off every day knowing what they were making is probably going to be a pile of shit? And it's like that simple philosophy rings true through this whole movie.
Yeah. Nobody knew what was going on at all throughout the whole making of the movie. Only like Greg Sestero and Tommy really saw the script.
Yep. They would, like, most actors would get pages. They wouldn't get they never got a full script. So only a few people ever read that full script. The shoot, like, one of my favorite things in the movie is when they start making The Room. It's like day one of 40 of shooting, you know, like, of the shoot.
Yeah.
And then by like midway through, it's like day 53 of 40 of shooting. Like, they just, like, because in my mind I was like, wait, this movie definitely took longer than 40 days to shoot, because like what I've learned from reading and listening to interviews and stuff since watching it is I knew it took more than 40 days. And that was one of those fun things where they just don't even explain it. It's just all of a sudden it pops up day 53 of 40 or day 60, whatever, 40, and you're like, oh, they're way over now.
Yeah.
And that's when obviously tensions start to rise and things like that on set, and when a lot of the real human character moments come through. But aside from just the story of this, let's talk about the cast, because that's maybe what's the most impressive thing. I don't know about the most impressive, but one of the most impressive things about this movie.
For The Disaster Artist?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, obviously you have James Franco's Tommy Wiseau, you have Dave Franco's Greg Sestero.
Which are great. Let's start with those two before we go any deeper, because you have brothers playing not brothers in this movie.
Yeah.
And, like, obviously the two of them look, and in ways sound, pretty similar.
Yeah.
So it could have been an easy confusion to have in this movie to them. But one, James Franco.
He nails that accent.
He is Tommy Wiseau.
Yeah.
Like, he embodies that character so perfectly. And apparently he directed in character. Like, he was directing at Tommy Wiseau.
Yeah, I've heard a couple different interviews with Seth Rogen and Dave Franco. And that's what they say. They're like, yeah, so James directed this movie in character. He's like, that's kind of weird.
Yeah.
He's like, that doesn't happen very often.
So, like, I love hearing that. And then, like, I don't know, James Franco, he just owns this part. I mean, aside from them putting him in the hair, he, like, they don't do too much. Like, I don't think there's any heavy makeup work on his face. I think it's just the face he's making while he has the hair on. He's, like, he's trying to make that kind of squished, almost looks like almost beaten up Tommy Wiseau face, because he's kind of got like a squint, like his one eye is kind of a little lazy. It's not lazy, but the way it kind of carries itself, it looks a little bit like it.
Yeah.
And Franco just finds that in this physical performance and is so good. Like, when people talk about him getting a potential Best Actor nomination, it's like, yeah, this guy became the role. This is exactly what I'd love to see when...
Yeah,
like,
this is what he's trying to portray, and he's hitting it right on the head. He's doing a perfect job. He's not like throwing in like a creative twist or anything. He's doing exactly what the character is.
And that's one of the fun... So I've obviously going back and listening to a bunch of interviews, but the How Did This Get Made podcast, Paul Scheer, Jason Mantzoukas, and June Diane Raphael, all of which are in this movie,
yep,
of course, because they did The Room. But fun, quick story about that. So they were... This week, that podcast, they re-ran The Room episode, but on the end of it, they have like 40 minutes of, or half an hour of interviews, and they're like 5-minute interviews with different people. He interviews the writers of the script, he interviews Dave and James Franco, and that's where there's a lot of interesting stuff that comes through with the two of them. Like, when they first wrote the script and they were having table reads, and Paul Scheer was in table reads and giving like script notes, Franco didn't even know who he was. Like, he didn't know that they had the How Did This Get Made podcast. He didn't know that they were, like, these Room diehards. And he was like, no, this guy's got, like, the best notes. I want him as a part of this. And he later learned, like, he kind of talks about it where it's like, I think in the end, all three of them end up in the movie no matter what because of this. But they all got cast for just being really good. And then, yeah, like, it kind of found out, like... And Paul Scheer talks about it in the interview. He's like, no, like, that's why all of us were there. We were auditioning because we're on How Did This Get Made? Like, this is we love The Room. We love this idea. And that's why we were all auditioning. He's like, I just thought all of you guys were great. Because now he's like, now I'm a How Did This Get Made super fan. But you just like the way this came together. And they talk about how, like, in test screenings, people who had no idea what The Room was thought he was just overacting. They didn't like, because they didn't know who Tommy was. So they considered putting raw footage of Tommy at the beginning of the movie rather than at the end, just to show people who didn't know, like, no, this guy, like, this is,
yeah,
I'm not overdoing it. And that's how they kind of came to the decision, or like they kind of went over that, because they played the side by sides at the end.
Yep.
And that's really where it shows you that, no, The Room was this ridiculous.
Even at the beginning of The Disaster Artist, they have those interviews with like Adam Scott and, like, all the different actors.
Yeah, they get testimonials from famous, like, honest testimonials, too. That's what's great about it. And they meet J.J. Abrams does one.
Yeah.
Kristen Bell, Adam Scott, Ike Barinholtz, whole bunch of people just talking about how much they love this movie and why. And why, like, why it's transcended this, oh, it's just a bad movie thing.
Yeah, and they even reference a little bit of Tommy Wiseau. They talk about him a little bit and how out there he is and how almost alien-like his character, or his personality is, not his character. That's the guy he actually is. And that kind of gives, I mean, obviously we went in knowing The Room 100%, but that might give a little, like, sort of foreshadowing to someone who hasn't seen The Room, like, put your seatbelt on. This is going to be a crazy ride. And the character is not something you're used to at all.
Exactly. And, like, keep in mind, it's real. Like, what the performance he's giving is not over the top. It's not Hollywood exaggeration. Like, that is Tommy Wiseau. And that's what's so crazy about it all.
Yeah. They interview Tommy Wiseau. Or they, like, asked him, James Franco and them, after he saw the movie, how, like, accurate the portrayal was. And he said 99.9%. Which, I mean, is kind of wild, because that means every single event and everything that happened in the movie, in The Disaster Artist, was just about everything that happened on set. And They said, I saw an interview with him on Jimmy Kimmel where he, James Franco brought on Tommy Wiseau with him, and they asked him what the 0.1 discrepancy was, and he said it was lighting. And James Franco was like, yeah, I came up to him after the movie, and he's got his sunglasses on.
That's
and it was
amazing.
Funny because in the disaster artist, he references the lighting at the one when she passes out. He's like, oh, so now you know everything about lights, Bob.
it's great. And the, like I said, they give you the like side by sides of their recreations versus actual scenes in the room in the end, which are a great selling point. Also, stay after the credits. We're not going to spoil it, but there is a fun little thing for the fans at the like after the credits.
It's very
has fun. Nothing to do with the movie, but man, it's just like the perfect treat for fans of the room and people who love the Disaster Artist. I guess we'll just quick final thoughts on the Disaster Artist. What are your final thoughts? What do you think about it overall?
I loved it. It was a lot of fun. I mean, I went in expecting to obviously enjoy myself. It's a James Franco, Seth Rogen vehicle. Those two actors are great. They put out great stuff. And from what I had heard before even seeing The Room, they were really putting their heart and soul into this movie. And James Franco was doing everything in his power to make this as honest and portray Tommy Wiseau as accurately as possible. And I think they did that, and they did a really good job. It was very interesting to hear a lot of this backstory because it's wild. Obviously, this is probably not something that happens on a regular movie set, but it's kind of cool to see some of the stuff that they're throwing in there and what they have to do and kind of what happens when you're not prepared for a movie, because that's basically what they were doing. They were just, nobody knew their lines the day of the shoot, and they'd come in, okay, well, what are my lines? Oh, here's your first, like, here's your line or whatever.
And yeah, like he would tell them their lines as they were about to go shoot a scene, which was great. I think it's fantastic. I don't see how people who love movies won't go watch this movie and not love it, because like in a greater sense too, it's about loving movies. Like the scene,
yeah.
I don't want to like spoil much for anyone, but there's a scene towards at the premiere when he walks Tommy back to the theater. Like, not spoiling what's happening, but you know what I'm talking about, when he walks him back and he opens the door to like change the, like that was one of those moments that just as someone who loves movies, like made me so happy, because that was just it. Like, it was one of those great moments that's just the general thesis of why the people who love this
they
stuff
make it
love
to,
this stuff.
To have the people watching enjoy themselves. That's why they're making the movie. And although people don't necessarily see The Room as this like passionate drama that he maybe first anticipated, everyone is getting a lot of entertainment, and he's bringing joy to his fans. And I mean, that's what making movies is about. It this the Disaster Artist is about a guy who's passionate about making movies, and he's putting everything he has into this movie. And I mean, that's what James Franco did in The role, so that's why it was perfect.
Yeah, and like in a greater sense, it's not just about like it's about how it, like the difference between art, the artist and their actual art, and like once you've created that art and released it to the world, how the world now takes that art and they can do what they want with it. Like it's,
yeah,
there's a difference. Like an artist's intention doesn't typically really matter all that much in art, because if the people don't interpret it that way, it doesn't matter. So you can make a piece of art and sit there as the artist and be like, well, this is what it means. But if the people don't see that or don't care about that, then it doesn't matter. And where there's something like The Room, where it's like Tommy may have made this movie to be like this great American drama, but that's not what it was. But the like, but when the people took it and took a hold of it and turned it into what it is, they found a whole new way of interacting with it. And it's like one of those fun and fascinating discussions to have, is just like once art leaves an artist's hands, how much of it they actually get to control anymore, and how much it just has now become the public's, and they get to decide what it means and how it goes over and things like that.
It kind of shows how media like movies and stuff are actually, they are, it is art. It's exactly like a painting is viewed. You might, an abstract painting, you might see it as something else, just like the simple brushstrokes, you might interpret those as something else, and that's how you connect to it. And some people see it as a completely different thing, and it's the same way with the movie. Although a lot of the times they're just putting out a simple plot for you, but everyone interprets something differently, and that's how you get that's how you enjoy it, and that's where you get the value of that art.
Yeah.
Is from how you view it and not necessarily what the artist anticipated how you'd view it.
Yeah. So I just want to, before we move on, I just want to run down the cast real quick. Because, I mean, everybody in this movie is good, whether they have big parts or small parts. So I just want to run down just to, if you need one last selling point for this movie. So obviously you have James Franco as Tommy, Dave Franco as Greg. Ari Greener plays Lisa, and she's great. Juliet, who plays Lisa in The Room. Seth Rogen is Sandy, who is he the script producer, I think?
Yes,
He's great. Alison Brie's in it. Jackie Weaver plays Carolyn Claudette, the mother-in-law. Paul Scheer is really good as what does he do? He's one of the behind-the-camera guys. Raphael. I can't exactly remember what his position is. Is he a sound guy?
He's lights.
And he's great. Paul Scheer's character is really good. In the few scenes he has, he's good, really good. Zac Efron gets to play Chris R.
I love the scene in the theater with Zac Efron where the guy who's playing, what's his name, Adam or whatever?
Playing the psychologist.
Yeah, playing the psychologist in the movie. And he's sitting next to him and he leans over. He goes, hey, I you were in the movie, right? And he goes, yeah. He's like, I barely recognized you without the beanie and the gun.
Yes, yeah, so Zac Efron, really good. Josh Hutcherson as Denny is great. Like, a lot of these people only have a few scenes in this movie. I'm hoping there's a lot of extra stuff once we get, like, a Blu-ray and stuff of just, like,
them messing around. I liked how Megan Mullally was Greg's mom.
Mm-hmm. Jundan Raphael and Jason Mantzoukas, the other two members of How Did This Get Made, also in it, are very good. Nathan Fielders, who plays Peter, the psychologist, and he's great. Hannibal Buress. Melanie Griffin, Charlene Yee. Bob Odenkirk has a small part. Randall Park's in it briefly. There's just a lot of really fun and funny people in this movie, and just all of them together rounded out to make it. Like, because they're all in it because you could tell some people are in it because they're probably just fans of The Room and they wanted to have a part in this movie.
Yeah.
And they're all just, they're bringing as much care and love to the movie about the making of The Room as everyone did in making The Room. And that's just a small part of what makes it such a good movie. And you guys should all check it out before it leaves theaters in its small run.
I love, I was listening to the How Did This Get Made where they're interviewing Greg Sestero, and he talks about how Tommy's initial like vision and idea was to have Denny be like a mentally challenged kid.
Well, apparently that's supposed to, like, they just don't state it in the movie.
Yeah, and it doesn't, I mean, it's not necessarily portrayed that well either. You just kind of think it's like a needy neighbor kid or something. I don't even know
And that's what it is. Like, they briefly mentioned that, like, Tommy took him in and stuff. But it's, yeah, no, there's so much that was intended for this story that's not in the actual movie. It's never in the script. It's never in the dialogue.
Denny's supposed to be a 15-year-old kid, mm-hmm. but he really looks like a 35-year-old
kid. Well, he is. He's like a 26-year-old actor playing a 15-year-old kid. yeah, just things like that make this the making of The Room insane. So everybody go and check out The Disaster Artist. I'd like to see this make a good little bit of money. Obviously Star Wars is coming up this weekend, so that's going to bury a lot of pretty much everything in theaters right now.
Yeah, but hopefully those people looking for a good laugh and looking to enjoy themselves in a way other than lightsabers and the Force, maybe they'll go check it out.
Yeah, so just go check that out. And with that, we'll move into the main part of our show this week, where we are going to be talking about a lot of our holiday favorites, but one specifically, and that is Mickey's Once Upon a Christmas.
One time a year, there's a marvelous night when enchantment and wonder spark and take flight. Each home fills with joy on this grand holiday, with hearts growing warm in a magical way. The rooms are all covered with garlands and wreaths. The mantle is ready with stockings beneath. Lights twinkle and glow and bells brightly chime. The moment's arrived. It's here. Christmas time.
From 1999, a just over an hour long direct-to-DVD holiday special. It's basically a holiday anthology.
Yeah.
Three stories with a real simple wraparound. I feel like we got this as soon as it came out.
I feel like it too, because I remember watching it from as long as I can remember, and I would have been three when that came out, so.
Yeah, and we watched this a lot, and I would definitely watch it at least once every year, and it's never gotten old. I think all three segments are really strong, but I think now that I'm older, my rankings of which is the best and which is the worst have kind of flip-flopped. I don't think any of them are bad, but I just think from favorite to least favorite now they've kind of flipped just because some of the ones play to a little bit more kid fantasy and some of the other themes are just a little more appropriate and poignant now that we're a little bit older. So, I mean, like I said, this one's always been there. I don't know. Do you have any specific, like, I don't have any specific memories with this, just watching it a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I remember, I can, like, specifically remember some of the things that I got from the movie, like the themes and stuff throughout it. Like, watching it again, I can remember, oh, yeah, I remember how this kind of affected me as a kid and, like, what I thought. But nothing, no, like, specific memory watching it where something happened or anything like that.
Yeah. And like we were an easy sell. We're a Disney family. We grew up on so many Disney movies. So this was an easy sell for us. Always liked the Goofy movies were always some of my favorites. So the short with Goofy and Max is just a blast. I love the opening Huey, Dewey and Lewis, and Donald is a lot of fun. And the characters in all three shorts are characters we had always been familiar with, so
anyone who knows Disney knows.
Yeah, exactly. See, these are some of the most iconic characters ever.
Mickey.
And each story is really good, and some Christmas specials when you watch them nowadays, especially older ones, get a little preachy on the religious side of the holiday.
Yeah.
There's a certain part in the Charlie Brown Christmas special with Linus doing a Bible reading that is just like, oh, shoot me in the face. What I love about Mickey's Once Upon a Christmas, what I've always liked, is it's just about why the holiday season is so great. It has nothing to do with the specifics of Christmas. It's just like why this season is so great to everybody and like what it's all really about. Outside of whatever the religious pastor
teaches
is, like
the
that.
True spirit of Christmas.
Exactly.
Is what I like to think.
So I guess we'll just go through all three segments, and just give our thoughts. And then close up at the end what we think. And then once we're done talking about this, we'll shoot the shit for like 10 minutes just talking about other Christmas crap we like. The first segment
I like to call it I wish it was Christmas every day
is Huey, Dewey and Lewis with Uncle Donald, and basically it's Christmas Day and it goes by super fast and they get disappointed and they wish upon a star that it could be Christmas every day out of selfishness. So then their wish comes true and it's Christmas every day
just over and over.
And at first it's a lot of fun, they're loving it, Christmas every day, this is great. But it quickly gets to be a pain in the ass for
them. Well, they start memorizing everything that's happening. And the one day, which is like one of the last days before it reverses to normality, it's the day they decide to start like pulling pranks or whatever and try and get a few extra laughs and change the course of the day. And that's when everything goes wrong. And they realize what Christmas is about and everything. So it starts out with them taking the cooked turkey and replacing it with a live turkey in the tray. So when they take off the little lid on the serving tray, the turkey runs around the house and destroys everything, including the piano and the Christmas tree, and everyone's chasing them. And yeah, that's kind of
part
of the story.
Yeah, at first it's that they just want it to be Christmas every day because it is superficial reasons. They get their presents, they have a big meal, they get to have fun, they don't have to worry about anything. And what my favorite thing about this short and why I think it's very, very well made is by the end of it, the like 15 minutes or however long it is, and they're super annoyed with the chipmunks in the morning.
Yep.
By the time that happens, you've heard their little wake-up call enough. You're also very annoyed with the chipmunks. And you're like, yes, shut up. I do not want to hear this anymore. Like, it works with, like, the story works with you in that great way where you kind of deteriorate at the same rate as Huey, Dewey, and Lewis. And I really, really like that. You'll hear me say this a bunch in this episode. I love Disney animation, and especially going back now and watching some of the last thralls of Disney 2D before we hit the turn of the century and digital animation. They buy Pixar and that's it. It's not all digital. there's just like, there's just some great stuff in this. Like, I love, and they redo this over and over in a different ways throughout their Groundhog Day style story. But the first one is when Uncle Donald comes in and they're already ripping apart their presents, and he throws the breakfast in the air,
the
and
pancakes all
land
on
all
his
lands
head.
On him, and then it droops off and it leaves one egg on his head, and then he starts burning with anger and it cooks the egg on the top of his head and it turns brown and it's cooked. I love little bits like that where, like, one of the later ones is they hit him with all of their gifts, and he gets the plane and the propellers on the side of his head, and it starts flying him towards them. It's just like super angry and he's steaming.
The one propeller's in his mouth spinning.
Yep. and it's like great little animation bits like that in this segment are really good. I like the ending of it a lot when it's the day after Christmas and they have to take Uncle Donald up in the sled they built for him, and
the SS Donald,
and then it just falls apart. This is probably my second favorite as a kid.
Yep.
Because, I mean, again, it's kid fantasy is this one. Like, this is one where you watch and you're like, yeah, like, oh, I always wish for Christmas every day. Like, it's one of those great kid fantasy ones that's also, by the end, you're like, oh, wait, no, yeah, that's why we don't want it to be that every day. Now, I still have a lot of fun with it. I think of the three of these, it's probably the most surfacey and, like, kind of simple and basic.
Yeah.
So, great for kids. Like, obviously, great. All the messaging, great for kids and stuff. But now it's just more of a fun little 20-minute short of Huey, Dewey, and Lewis and Uncle Donald. I like that they have Uncle Scrooge in there as well.
Yeah.
Post their Christmas carol, because now he's Holiday Scrooge, so he's got to play his Christmas carols on the piano, all that type of stuff. That first short is great, and it's a great little way to kick it off. It's a simple, easy holiday short that's nothing too weighty, and it's just like, yeah, we love Christmas, and at the end of it, it's just telling you that one of the great things about Christmas isn't what you get or the day itself. It's about how you spend it and who you spend it with.
Exactly. It's teaching you the true spirit of Christmas and kind of making the most of the day and doing what you can to help others and not necessarily be selfish, because they make breakfast for Donald. They give when they wake up, they give the acorns to the chipmunks.
Mm-hmm.
They sing the Christmas carol, and one of the things that Donald had been steaming about every single day was that they'd eat before everybody else at dinners, and they'd sit there politely and wait and help bring the turkey to the table. And kind of just helping out the small things, just making everybody's life a little easier rather than making it harder, which they were doing
it's
before.
A good learning moment. First good first short, which quickly moves into which was probably my favorite as a kid.
Before we switch, I just want to throw in the one thing that always makes me laugh. It's the ant, the big goose, who comes in. Where are my boys? Where are my kisses? And the one. I think it's the second last day. They put on their scuba masks and they walk up, and she like slobbers all over them. I thought that was just a little funny thing.
Yeah, no, it's fun. That moves into what was probably my favorite of the three shorts as a kid, which is I feel like I had the name for this written down somewhere, but it's
A Goofy Christmas.
A Goofy Christmas. So it's our favorite Goofy and his son Max, and basically. It's a story of a kid's like last thralls of believing in Santa and like that,
exactly.
what believing in Santa means. It's not like taking it away from that, the silly, obvious sense of just like kids believing in a fairy tale. It takes it into something a little deeper of what that belief is actually representing, because they have Goofy as someone who believes in this as well. It's not just a kid's thing. And so they're trying to mail their letter to Santa, and in the process, Max kind of has his faith in Santa doubted, and
thanks to the neighbor Pete,
our favorite asshole Pete, and yeah, so it's basically a short little story of Max. What I like about it is in the beginning, it's Max trying to find any proof he can that Santa exists.
Yep.
And then when he gets tricked by his dad, he feels betrayed, and he kind of turns on himself, which is where Goofy then takes on himself to he's going to prove to Max that Santa exists. And it flips the tables by the end of it, where now Goofy's trying so hard to find any evidence of Santa existing that Max is now putting on the Santa suit
and
to
coming
trick
down
him.
The chimney.
Yeah, so he can be Santa for him and save his Christmas. And it's just this fun little And I feel like that's what most, I mean, even the first one, but definitely the second two are just like, kind of just like tables turning on themselves and how they start the short with an one idea of what Christmas is and end it with a whole new like revelation of what this holiday actually yep. is. I think I always loved this one the most as a kid because Max is asking for a snowboard for Christmas.
I have the specific name written Jesus, down. Jesus, you wrote the whole snowboard. Thing down? So he says, I want a one of a kind carbon fiber, torque rod, snappy flex, tip to tail, rail to rail, twin directional snowboard.
Woo. love it. Yeah, so I don't know. We're snowboarders. We grew up on snowboards. So it's just one of those things that like I think that just instantly related me to Max because that's one of the first things he says in this short is that because they're shoveling the driveway and Goofy asks him what he wants.
Yep.
And he just right verbatim spits that out.
And that's another little animation thing I love where they're shoveling the driveway and he hops on the snow or the shovel and he's just sliding around yep. like spinning. It was just a little like, I don't know, small little animation thing. That was a lot of fun.
And actually, there's what's probably the best thing about this and where we should probably, I think we should stick for the rest of this short is the animation in this is the coolest of all of them because you also get the whole mall sequence where they're trying to catch the mailman and it's Goofy trying to get the letter in the mall. And they do yep. like, I think they do two or three of the Indiana Jones escape scenes where you have him swinging across to get to the giant other side ornaments. And then you have the giant ornament chasing him rolling in everything like that
and then there's the he's in the toy store the kids are shooting yes. the guns and the dart guns
and he's gotta go over the gator pit
yeah he knocks over the barrel of gators and they're chomping and he takes the jump rope and swings over them
yep so they're and literally doing an Indiana Jones
the letters sitting on top of a pyramid of teddy bears.
yep. So, yeah, it's just great stuff like that. And it's a really cool animated sequence and how everything is done. And what's like just speaks to what's the best thing about animation like this is them showing us things that can't happen in real life. Just showing us obnoxious, fun
yeah.
things that you can do with animation.
And then they throw in a nice little bit of humor. The one scene where the lady's like, what else do you got? I got one spot right here. She's pointing to her hat where she needs something like ornament to go on there. And the giant ornament comes rolling in and crashes in. And she goes, ooh, I'll take it.
I love that joke. I love that whole sequence in the mall. I think it's a blast.
Yeah,
it's
fun
exactly
scene.
What, I mean, it's Goofy. It's exactly what you get with the character of Goofy. It's yeah. just these hijinks that are so much fun. That's like one of my favorite things about this short and just this whole thing in general is just some classic cartoon hijinks, you know?
Yeah. And of course, it reminds us of the Goofy movies, the yes. extremely Goofy yeah. movie too.
Which are just the best.
Yeah. Which we obviously related to a lot.
Yeah. So this one, like I said, probably my favorite as a kid. I think it's my second favorite now. Still a blast. The characters are great. It's super funny. And just a good, like, heartwarming Christmas story because, like, Goofy's the best. Goofy takes, he cooks a whole meal for their less fortunate neighbors and yep. takes it over there. Like, they're always trying to help people out.
It's another, than the whole other thing, like, in the first story where it's not necessarily about yourself. It's about giving, like, it's about others and giving to others and helping out in the, any way you can. Which obviously they reference by going and cooking the meal for the neighbors. And then when Max gets his snowboard on Christmas, he goes over next door to the neighbor. Or he's like going down and Goofy's like, oh, where are you going, Max? And he's like, I'm going to go share my present with little Timmy next door.
if I have one small complaint about this little animated anthology as a whole, it's very small. It'll bring it back up against talking about the next one. They're always using snowboards wrong in this. They're yeah. using them as push sleds.
Yeah.
which, whatever, it's a Disney animated. But I, it's like, I remember as a kid, that was one thing that always made me laugh. And then I like watching it last night, I got a good chuckle when it happens again in this next short, which we'll move right into, which is the final of the three. And
you're always moving so fast. I mean, I have things to reference.
What do you mean reference?
I don't know. I like the one scene where Goofy's trying to get a picture of Santa. He's like sitting out there at night, and the first one he goes out and he hears the bells and he jumps up onto the roof and he's looking for it and he almost falls off the roof. He's like, where is it, Maxie? And he points to the neighbor across the street walking their dog. And then later on in the night he calls Max up again because he thinks he sees him because there's a guy across the street or on Pete's house His silhouette looks like Santa. He's got a sack over his shoulder, and then a spotlight comes up from a helicopter above him, and it's a robber stealing from Stinky Pete. So, and that was kind of the whole thing referencing Goofy kind of losing hope in the holiday and his belief in Santa.
Yeah.
It's just a funny thing I like.
Yeah, no, it's funny, and it has a good wraparound in the end. I like that one. Yeah, so I don't know. I just don't think we need to linger on these too long. They're pretty short. Yeah. We don't need to go scene for scene. People can go watch it themselves. I'm sure it's a lot more fun than us just talking about what's happening. But that moves us into the last one. Did you have a name for this one?
I just called it Mickey and Minnie's Christmas.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure this is based on like a classic Christmas story. I don't know if it's a movie or a show or something, but I've seen the like versions of this
lot. Two people in a hard time, kind of short on money and short on their luck, and they're trying to get gifts for each other, and they have to give up something, which ends up like, I don't know.
I mean this is a simple one. Basically, Mickey and Minnie each need to get a gift for each other. It's Christmas Eve. They've waited till last minute because they're having money. This is all right, so this is why I'll just put this up front. This is my favorite now. Like watching it as an adult, it was my least favorite as a kid, just because it was. I mean, compared to the other two, it's not quite as uppity and fun and kid centered.
It's a little more down on your luck.
Yeah, well, this is a more authentic and real little Christmas tale, and it's basically the two of them are down on their luck financially. Mickey's got his little money bag, but he knows it's not full enough to get the gold chain he wants to get for Minnie's gold watch that she keeps on a string so she can wear it around her neck. Minnie's got like overdue bills, and she's hoping her Christmas bonus will be enough to buy a case for his harmonica.
Yep.
And basically throughout this segment, we watch as everything that was supposed to set them up for a perfect Christmas just goes wrong. Mickey has a series of unfortunate events that leave him broke. Minnie, her Christmas bonus does not turn out to be what she'd hoped it would be. And now neither of them have the money to buy the gifts they want. So basically in the end, they each trade in their things, the harmonica and the watch, to get the case and the chain for each other. So when they swap gifts at the end, it's one of those funny and romantic moments where it's like, I gave up my thing to get this thing for you, and you gave up your thing to get this thing for me. So now we have the other parts of our things without having them anymore. And it's just like, I don't know, it's one of those great stories of just like, it didn't matter what they were getting each other, and like, what mattered is what they were willing to go through to do it. Like, what they were willing to do to try and give each other the perfect Christmas. It's not about the thing or...
It's another spirit of Christmas type of thing where it's not about yourself. It's about what you can do for others, which is kind of how they all tie together, obviously.
Yeah. And it's, again, very simple. This one, I like watching it now, I like it a lot because, one, it's very real in the fact that it's too... lower middle class, somewhat blue collar workers working.
Yep.
Minnie works in retail. She works in Mortimer's, which is obviously supposed to be a Macy's. And Mickey works on a tree lot. Like
Pete's tree lot.
Yeah.
Crazy Pete.
Crazy Pete's tree lot. So they are working these lower middle class blue collar jobs, and they both get screwed over by their employers. Crazy Pete ends up stealing all of Mickey's money.
Because he was trying to sell the poor family on the 10-footer and make them buy it on credit, and then Mickey gives him a normal size tree.
So he takes what he would have made out of Mickey's tips and leaves him empty handed.
Yep.
Which, side tangent, if I was Mickey, as soon as that place went up in flames as I left, I would have ran back in there and took my money out that fat man's pocket. and then Minnie, she's supposed to be getting her big Christmas bonus from her boss. And when she gets it, it's a fucking 10-pound fruitcake.
Yeah.
So they both get screwed over by their employers, who they've both been working their asses off for to make the holiday season go by. And now their holiday is in jeopardy. Well, at least in their minds, is in jeopardy because of it. But like, what's great about this movie is like, especially with Mickey, because that's who it's centering on most of the time. Like, along the way, everything they're doing that's making it harder on themselves too is always something just showing how good of a person they are. Like, Mickey gives them the tree, and then he's like, oh, I have an hour to get to... When he realizes he could trade in the harmonica... Or no, he's going to try. I don't remember what he's going to do at first, but he knows he has to get to the shop, and then he gets pulled in. He's playing the harmonica, and he gets pulled into the show.
Yeah.
The Toys for Tots show, basically, and he starts playing the harmonica.
Because the firemen are at Crazy Pete's tree farm. Yep.
Which, like, talk about a great animation and musical sequence. When he starts playing that harmonica for the like, sad kid, and then he gets up on stage with Pluto, and he's doing his solo jig, and then out of nowhere, the band just comes back in with like a low trombone roar.
It's,
and
like it's a New Orleans jazz type of Christmas,
and they're basically
carol.
And they're all like Pigpen, since they were just at a fire, so they all have smoke coming off of them, and they're blowing smoke out of their instruments while playing this great uppity Christmas jam, and it's a lot of fun. Which leads to another fun little animated hijink scene, because then he's got 2 minutes to get to the shop, because that's when he realizes he could trade his harmonica.
Yep.
And that's the second scene where he takes a snowboard from a kid to use as a sled instead of a snowboard. And it's just like a great little, they're like, they're hitting off the roofs of trucks and like wrapping around light posts. It's great.
Landing on a bus.
Yeah. Great animated hijinks. And it all leads up to just like, and especially as a closer for this anthology, it's the perfect closer in like that moment of the two of them on the couch where they give each other their gifts and they just like have that laugh over what they both went through all day, thinking like they're gonna have Christmas ruined, and in the end it didn't matter, like it was just about them caring enough to do all of that.
Exactly. It kind of flip flops from the first two, where the first two were the kids or whatever were selfish and kind of thought Christmas was all about themselves and the gifts and blah, blah, blah. And then in the end, they find out it's about what you can do for other people and being caring and unselfish, obviously.
Yeah. So it's a great place to leave it off, because it's the simplest, but maybe best just like idea of Christmas, that it's just about actually caring and giving a shit about the people who also care about you. I like this. This is a good short. I mean, I really do like this short a lot. I like one of my favorite little bits and jokes in this one is with Crazy Pete at the tree lot, when they first cut to him and he's got like a couple twigs and some fucking wood glue, and he just slathers it on and he sprays it with this can and turns into a green tree, and it's like this is the spray can with a green tree and stuff. He goes, "Ooh, this stuff works pretty good."
Yeah. And then right after that is one of my favorite animated scenes of the whole, like, anthology, is where him and Mickey and Pluto are working together to go get all the Christmas trees on the stands, and Mickey's cutting the boards, and Pluto comes over and by, he's like, "You know what to do," and he starts rolling the trees down towards Mickey, and Mickey throws, he's like hammering the tree stands together, he throws them into the ground and they roll into place, and he hammers them in. It's just like a smooth, like, scene, like, I don't know.
That's some classic Disney right there. Yeah. No, that is some classic Disney animation, them doing stuff like that. And it's so much fun. And then, like, in the greater sense of it, this whole thing is just a really good Christmas special. You get the wraparound and voiceover done by Kelsey Grammer, which is awesome. Our man Blinky.
Yeah.
Doing the voiceover, and his voice is smooth as butter. So that's a nice little addition to it. I like the intros to each segment using one of the gifts under the tree, and those are the three gifts.
Yeah, that is a nice little thing.
And then the little wraparound of all of them showing up at the same place for Christmas dinner at the end of it all. Like, because that's one of the things, like, you're watching these all, and it's like, three separate stories. But, like, one of the great things about these, when they do Disney stuff like this, is they all exist in the same world. So I just love the wraparound, is like they've all had their own separate Christmas tales, and now they're coming together for one thing to have. Like, they're going to come together to celebrate the holiday as one.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just every time I watch it, it's one of those things we watched so much growing up and probably put on a lot when we were going to bed. So, like, I know a lot of the lines in this. I know a lot of, like, the sound effects of these movies, just, like, simple things.
Yeah.
Like, well, like you said, like, the where are my boys? Where are my kisses? Exactly. Like, that just, like, little sound bite I know so well and things like that, because we watch it at least once every Christmas. But when we were younger, we watched this a lot.
Yeah.
And I know there's a second one called Mickey's Twice Upon a Christmas, which we've probably seen.
Yeah,
I didn't watch for this.
That one came out in 2004.
That one's digital animation. Yeah. I took one glance at the like preview of it on Netflix, and I was like, I'm not watching that. I don't feel like it.
Yeah, I didn't watch it.
And it, I mean, even if it's got one or two good segments, it's not going to stack up to how great overall this one is. And I feel like it's one of those things that gets slept on this time of year because it wasn't like a theatrical release thing. I don't even think it was like an aired on TV thing. Obviously, it has in later years. It plays on Disney, yeah. I think, every year, stuff like that. But I don't think it was like, oh, we're airing this on ABC as like a Christmas special, then it's going to be on DVD.
Yeah, I think it was just a direct-to-video.
So I feel like this one gets slept on a lot, especially when you come to like a lot of the animated Christmas specials, the Grinch, whatever it may be, all of these little half-hour shorts that are out there, or even hour-long specials done for the Christmas season. The Mickey's Once Upon a Christmas is often overlooked, and that is kind of criminal because it's so fun.
Yeah.
And it's classic Disney. It really is.
It's just, yeah, it was just a little short that they put out for the holidays, which actually was phenomenal.
Yeah.
It was something we spent a lot of time with as kids, and I mean, I'm sure if I asked probably five of my friends, maybe one of them would know, like, would have seen it as a kid. It wasn't very large, especially if you weren't like a Disney family.
Yeah, so you guys should go. It's on Netflix, which is great. Go and check it out. It's just over an hour long. It's a quick watch. I have a feeling a lot of you who've never seen it, if you're into this type of stuff, are going to have a lot of fun with it.
Especially really if you have kids, too. It's yes. Very good for kids.
Oh, definitely put it on for the kids.
Anywhere from like 3 to 15, yep. Honestly.
Definitely put it on for the kids. It's a real, real good one. Yeah, I think that about covers that. Mickey's Once Upon a Christmas. Go check it out and let us know what you guys think of it. And before we close out this episode, we're just going to shoot the shit for a few minutes and talk about some Christmas stuff we like.
Yeah.
Whatever it may be. Yeah, I don't know. We're just going to kind of list some things, give you guys some ideas of what to watch, briefly touch on some stuff. So give me something first. You go.
I think first off, we should talk about probably both of our favorite, The Muppet Christmas Carol.
Oh, The Muppet Christmas Carol. I've been listening to the soundtrack. It's on HBO Go.
That soundtrack is fantastic.
yeah, no, this is my favorite iteration of The Christmas Carol.
Yeah, hands down.
I love it. I'm a big We're big Muppets fans.
Yeah, we used to play the Muppet Treasure Island game.
Yep,
on the computer.
The music's great. Yeah. Michael Caine as Scrooge is awesome, and I like Gonzo doing the Charles Dickens with Rizzo the Rat. The whole movie, that stuff's so fun. And
oh my god, I can't even remember the names. Who are the
Marley?
Yeah, the guys who sit up in the rafters. Usually,
the best.
They are great.
Their song is one of my favorites of the movie.
What are they? Ghosts of Christmas Past? Is that yeah, there?
Yeah, they're the Ghosts of Christmas Past.
Yeah, they're great.
They are phenomenal. Their stuff is a little dark, like I like in their yes. song when they talk about leaving they evicted an entire orphanage and they're laughing about their yeah. frostbitten toes out in the cold. Like, I love it. I don't know. It's, yeah, everybody knows Dickens' Christmas Carol. It's a very old story that has been told over and over and over again in many ways. I think most recently with Jim Carrey in a very weird motion capture animated movie, which means it's fairly creepy, yeah. As we've learned with that in Polar Express.
I never saw, what was it called? Or was it just Christmas Carol? A Christmas Carol. I don't think I ever saw it.
It's not bad. I don't mind it. It's just kind of got that creepy animation yeah. to it at times.
Yeah, Dad's been talking to me about the Polar Express recently. He was like, I'm not that big of a fan. It's kind of a creepy looking movie.
Yeah. So yeah, Muppet Christmas Carol is about as good as you can get telling these. So, I mean, the classic characters and yeah. Kermit and,
this,
and
all I mean, them. Just listening to the soundtrack gets you in the Christmas mood.
Yeah.
You don't exactly. even have to watch the movie. Just you're driving somewhere, turn on the soundtrack to the Muppets Christmas Carol, and you'll be in a joyous Christmassy mood.
Exactly. I don't know. Do we really need to say much on these? Just kind of intro them and give why we think you should watch them. Cause
yeah,
because Muppet Christmas Carol, there's a very good chance it'll be an episode in coming years in the Christmas season.
I can see it. Doing yeah. this.
So yeah, we just want to give you guys some cool things to watch. My first thing isn't even a movie. It's another TV episode.
Oh,
the Justice League Christmas special.
Oh my God. Best Christmas special ever. We've watched this constantly because yeah. I think didn't Dad burn it to a DVD
yep. and then I would watch it a bunch it. When it was on Netflix when yeah. the series was on Netflix.
It's such a good episode.
It's the only episode in the two seasons of Justice League that isn't like a two-part. It's the only standalone episode, and it's just because it's a fun Christmas story. You basically get three side stories where Clark takes Martian Manhunter home to Kansas for the holidays with the Clark family. You get John Stewart's Green Lantern and Hawk Girl kind of have their own festive. They show each other how they celebrate their holidays, which is fun because you get them playing, having a snowball fight in the snow, and then going to a fucking bar planet and getting into a bar fight because that's what Hawk Girl wants to do. And then you have my favorite is the Flash storyline with Gorilla Grodd, because it's
Flash
just like
is great.
One, Gorilla Grodd's my favorite villain, and it's one of those great like. A villain being humane moment, like, because he ends up getting him to help him rebuild this toy that these kids at the orphanage really want. Is there something with Batman in it too?
I thought it was Flash and Batman. I could be wrong. I remember an interaction between Flash and Batman, which is probably
maybe
one
that's
of the
only
things.
Yeah, maybe that's the only part when Batman's really in it.
I feel like there's something with the Flash, with the Flash and Batman. Because I feel like I remember like the Batman being all dark or whatever, because obviously his family died when he was young. And I feel like I remember like the Flash going, hey, Bats, come on, it's Christmas.
Ball. Yeah.
Like, something, I don't know.
He's definitely in it. I just don't know if he has his own separate storyline like they do. But we love this in our house. Superman, Martian Manhunter stuff is great. Martian Manhunter getting gifted a knit sweater and Hello Kitty. It's a lot of fun, and if you're a fan of that TV show, it's a really good Christmas special that's just, like, about enjoying yourself the holidays. And it's what it's really good about is it's also about how everyone celebrates differently. Like, everyone does the holiday in their own ways. There's no right or wrong way to celebrate the holidays.
Exactly.
Big fan of that.
Spending time together.
Yeah.
It's just a great Christmas episode.
100%. All right, what do you got next?
So next, let's go with, I don't know if this might upset you, but this for me is above this is a sequel. I think it's above the first movie. I'm gonna go with Home Alone 2.
Lost in New York?
Yes.
You like Lost in New York more than the original, huh?
So this is one I actually have a story with.
Okay.
So me, my friends Max and Jason, and I think even Connor Kester was there. We were all hanging out, and it was Christmas time, and we turned on Home Alone 2 Lost in New York because it was on Netflix. And just the jokes in it and stuff with Harry and Marv, just because they're obviously idiots. Like the one, they're going, it's when they're first running up the stairs, and he's dropping all the paint cans and stuff, and they knock out Marv first and Harry. Or they knock out Harry first, and Marv goes up, and he's banging on the steps going, "Don't worry, Harry, I'll get him." And he's just, like, joking. And then the thing comes down, and he goes, "Oh!" There's just some great humor in this one, and I love the abandoned house he's in. It's, just like, his uncle's or whatever. I just love it so much. There's so much fun in it, and then Central Park with the pigeon lady. Everything about this one I love. And I like, obviously the first one I liked a lot, but the second one, I don't know, I just have this connection where it hits a bone in my body. It just makes me crack up every time.
I get that. I would probably put the first over the second, but it's not like that much, and I still love the second. They're both just great. Watching Kevin McAllister just torture these two burglars is so much fun.
The Wet Bandits.
Daniel Stern is amazing. The dude is so funny, and I feel like he was just never used enough. Obviously, Pesci is Pesci. That dude, when he screams, it's like no other. I love Joe Pesci. What's fun about Lost in New York compared to the first one is, like, there's a lot in the first one where you're like, I might actually, like, kill these guys. The second one, it's like everything that happens, you're like, you're dead, you're dead, you're dead. Why are you still alive?
Exactly.
That would kill you.
I love the one part is probably my favorite joke, where they're climbing down the rope, and he goes, Marv, did you fall on kerosene? Or he goes, Harry, did you fall on kerosene? He goes, no. He goes, it's the rope. And he goes, now who would soak a rope in kerosene? And they realize all of a sudden he's at the bottom with a match, and he lights the rope on fire. It's one of my favorite. And they fall from like the third story all the way down through wooden pallets into the basement.
It's very slapstick, very fun.
Yeah, it's just over the top humor that, I don't know, I just love it. I love it so much.
Yeah, the Home Alone movies are fucking great. I don't have a bad thing to say about them really at all. And obviously, I'm sure most everybody has seen them. If you still haven't seen the Home Alone movies, you're crazy.
You could skip three, obviously.
You're crazy. I loved three growing up. I'd like to watch three again now. and see if I still enjoy it. Because when I was a kid, I loved
it. I used to watch it all the time with you, I think. And yeah. I remember watching it. And then I watched it probably like 5 years ago. And I remember kind of not hitting the right spot. And I was just like, I don't know.
I got to check it out again. I don't know how it would hold up these days. But as a kid, I definitely really liked Home Alone 3.
The one thing in that I liked is how he used like the remote control car and stuff like that. Just, there was a couple things I enjoyed in that one.
Yeah.
What do you got next?
What do I have next? Let's go a more recent one that I only saw for the first time last year. And I think it only came out 2 years ago. But I think is just brilliant. And this is not family friendly, even though I know we were going to try and keep this. I got to talk about The Night Before.
Oh, The Night Before is great.
Especially because we talked about Seth Rogen in The Disaster earliest. I mean,
this is one our dad recorded on the DVR at home, and he watched it. He said he loved it.
Yeah, he loves it. It's so funny.
He also likes Bad Santa a lot too, but he loved this one. I was kind of surprised.
There's the double features, this with Bad Santa or this with A Very Harold and Kumar Christmas.
That's another one I had on the list, but we can skip that now.
Oh, I was just talking about them both together because I think it is a great double feature, but The Night Before is just, it's so great. I mean, it's Seth Rogen, Anthony Mackie, and Joseph Gordon-Levitt as childhood friends who are spending what is supposed to be their last Christmas together, and they're getting super fucked up.
Yep.
And what makes this movie amazing is Seth Rogen is super fucked up throughout the entire thing, and he makes me laugh.
Tripping
so
on
much.
Mushrooms, right?
Tripping on mushrooms. I think he does some blow at some point. Basically, his wife gives him this whole box of drugs for the night. It's do all of these, and you're just like, oh, that's what this movie is going to be.
I love the best part is with Seth Rogen in the synagogue. Or no, he's in the church. He's in a church and he's Jewish and he throws up.
Yep. No, that whole church scene is amazing.
It's great.
It's just, it is laugh out loud hilarious. And yeah, pair that up with A Very Harold and Kumar Christmas, which is another Christmas movie that just has a special place in my heart. It has a special place in my heart. But that's another really fun one, especially if you like those guys. Basically, what I would say with The Night Before and A Very, Very Harold and Kumar Christmas, if you like the people involved, you will really enjoy both of those movies.
Exactly.
And then also Michael Shannon is amazing in The Night Before as the weed dealer.
Yeah, Mr. Green. He's the best.
Yeah, so I just wanted to give a quick shout out to those for the people who don't want some of the family-friendly stuff and don't want the horror. There's where you can get your nice little
adult
Christmas in. Yeah,
it's great.
You got something else?
I guess we should just say that we're not going to cover the horror, like the Krampus.
Yeah, we did all that last week.
We already covered those. So for this one, I'm going to go with one that's a little more recent that was aired on like NBC or something, or NBC or ABC. Prep and Landing. This is one our dad recorded because he just saw like commercials for it, obviously, and he loved it and got us watching it. And it's a lot of fun. It's a different look at the whole Santa come into your house and everything. It's two elves that are helping. It's the Prep and Landing crew. They're prepping the house for Santa to come, and they have to get the roof ready to land. They put the lights on the roof. They puff the stocking so Santa can just come in real quick. They make sure the trees are trimmed correctly so they can fit presents underneath. I love it. I don't know. It's just a lot of fun.
No, it's great.
The animation's great in it for digital animation. A lot of that like more technical stuff that you wouldn't think about with Christmas, and it really does just give a different look at the whole Christmas traditional
Santa. It's great. Like you said, the animation's a lot of fun. It's just a super creative little Christmas story.
Exactly.
Like taking an angle you wouldn't expect to see doing it with the Prep and Landing elves. Which is actually kind of connected to what my next pick is going to be, because they do a similar thing in that movie where they're showing like a more modern and different take on Christmas, which is really fun. And like, I like when these kids, especially the animated stuff, take it like the idea of Santa Claus seriously, and they're like, all right, how are we going to have it so Santa Claus can deliver to every kid in one night? Like, I love when they actually decide they're going to make up a scenario where that is real. And they do that in Prep and Landing. And another thing that did that is it's another recent movie. And it's Arthur Christmas. It's a British Christmas movie from the Art Bag Studios who they typically do stop motion. They do like Wallace and Gromit and Chicken Run, stuff like that.
You love your stop motion.
Love my stop motion. They did an animated Christmas movie called Arthur Christmas. He's the second son of Santa Claus.
Yes.
So he's not in line to become Santa Claus. He works in the mailroom. He's kind of a klutz. And basically on Christmas night, someone gets forgotten. There's like, they have this whole new modern way of delivering gifts, and one gift gets forgotten. And Arthur takes it upon himself with the help of one elf to go out, and his grandpa, old Santa, to go out and deliver this gift. And it's a very similar, like the whole opening of the movie is just like, they have a giant Santa spaceship, basically, that they go around, where they have just like thousands of elves descend upon a city to deliver presents. The way they do everything, they have like the stocking guns that scan how naughty or nice they've been and decide what they get in there. Like, super creative and fun. And then after that, once you get like post Christmas, and they realize they have to go out again to deliver the gift. There's just like little things that get dropped throughout that are like really interesting or just like really fun. When I like when Arthur brings Christmas the board game to Christmas dinner with current Santa, his older brother who's gonna be Santa, and Grandpa who was Santa and Mrs. Claus. And he's so excited to play Christmas the game, and they all just kind of like look at him like, we do not care at all. It's just, it's a great heartfelt Christmas movie. And it's another one that's just about what the holiday season is about. It's not anything specific about a Christmas or anything like that. It's just why people love the holidays and what makes them so great.
Yeah. It puts some lore around the holiday and the idea of Santa Claus, and it's great. It's similar to Prep and Landing.
Yeah, and with both these, with Prep and Landing and Arthur Christmas, I feel like not enough people know about these. These are kind of modern Christmas classics that should be talked about a lot, and they don't get recognition. Definitely you should go and check both of those out.
Yeah. Arthur Christmas was one I never watched until recently. I started dating my girlfriend, and I went over to their house around Christmas time, and her little sister had it on, and I had never seen it before, and we sat down and watched the whole movie, and I loved it.
I have fallen in love with Arthur Christmas. Such a blast. Real big fan of that one. Anything else you want to bring up?
I mean, there's obviously the Christmas classics, The Grinch, The Nightmare Before Christmas, Rudolph.
Obviously watch all the classics you're going to watch every year. Really Christmas Vacation, Christmas Elf. Story, Elf. Yeah, like the stuff, we're trying to steer away from a lot of the stereotypical stuff, because obviously you all know to watch that and seek it out. You can go watch like the Community Christmas specials are a lot of fun. The Bob's Burgers Christmas episodes are always fun.
They just
fun.
Put out an hour-long one yesterday.
Really? Okay,
yes,
so
I have to watch that. That's going to be great.
Yeah, I'm going to have to marathon all the Bob's Burgers Christmas episodes. Simpsons had a bunch of Christmas episodes. Like, a lot of Christmas television, for sure.
Yeah.
Check a lot of that stuff. I think there was actually, Dad just bought this. It's on our Vudu account now. I got to watch it. He bought the Christmas episode of Batman the Animated Series. From, like, I forget which season it's from, but yeah, he bought that one, so that's on our Vudu now as well.
We can't end this episode without talking about probably, honestly, I'm going to put this one over Mickey's Once Upon a Christmas. That would be the Flintstones Christmas episode, not the Christmas Carol, the Christmas episode where Fred goes into the department store and he plays Santa Claus.
Oh, you know how long it's been since I've seen this one?
Yeah, Dad, he bought the Christmas Carol, because on the Flintstones Christmas Carol is... it's an extra. It's that episode, because they don't actually sell that episode solely anywhere.
And we definitely, our dad definitely had that on like a VHS tape or something.
Yeah,
because we used to watch that.
I think it was recorded on VHS or DVD or something.
I'm gonna rewatch that one ASAP, because I don't remember much outside of Fred playing Santa. But we watched it all the time growing up.
There's the two carols in that. Christmas is my favorite time.
Oh, yeah, the music.
Because, and then Dino the Dinosaur.
Oh, my God, I can't believe I forgot about these. Yeah, I got to go give that a rewatch.
These are classics.
And there you go. If you want to know how to watch that one, too, go out and buy the Flintstones Christmas Carol. You can watch it as an extra on the DVD.
Yeah,
it
was only like $8.
That's a good Christmas episode of television. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Isn't there a Jetsons one, too, that Dad used to have? That one, I mean, we watched it.
I think they were on a double feature, I think is what it was. He recorded it to DVD or VHS or whatever, and it was just one after the other.
So those are always fun. Yeah, there's just, I don't know, there's a lot of great Christmas stuff out there you can find. Hopefully, if you hadn't seen anything we've talked about here today, you seek them out, especially the family stuff if you have like kids and things, because a lot of these are just really good to pop on, especially like Mickey's Once Upon a Christmas or some of these animated Christmas specials. They're really good and they're a lot of fun. I don't know. Do you have any? I think that's about it for me. I can't think of anything else off the top of my head.
That's about it for me too.
So, yeah, that pretty much does it for this episode, and that's going to wrap it up for our Christmas talk and holiday entertainment talk for this year. Like we said at the beginning, we're not entirely sure what's coming next. Maybe a Star Wars review, hopefully a 2017 in review episode. And then in 2018, we will be back with full episodes, get back into talking a little more in depth about stuff. Who knows what we're going to do? It's going to be January. We got a lot of fun ideas sitting around of things that we want to do. So try and do something real cool. We'll have some more free time at that point. So maybe we'll pick something that we can actually dive a little harder into than usual.
Maybe some movie will come out that'll spark something.
Some
just out of nowhere, out of the blue, maybe.
Yeah, we'll figure something out. So yeah, tune in for that stuff coming up. Just keep an eye on our feed. If we do the Star Wars review and the 2017 in review episode, they'll pop up over the next 2 weeks. But yeah, thanks for listening again to this is now the fifth episode of Tales from the Bunk Bed. Where can everybody find you, Lucas?
You can find me on Twitter at Lazaro895. That's LAZARO895.
Yep, and you can find me anytime on Twitter as well at Zach, that's ZACHWWMovies. Also, I want to put this up because I keep forgetting to mention this. Our podcast does have a Twitter as well.
Yes.
And I always forget the...
And an email even.
Yeah. one sec. I gotta bring this up just because.
Remember, guys, we're always interested in bringing other people on to see what their experiences were with one of our topics.
As
they grew up. So if you remember, if you have fond memories of these things and you want to hop on an episode, shoot us an email or
tweet us. Yeah, so you can find us on Twitter at BunkBedTales, and I'm pretty sure the email is the same, BunkBedTales@gmail. So yeah, reach out if you have anything, if you have any comments, or if you want to. I mean, maybe if we get some good responses to anything of like your experiences with things, we'll read them on air or something like that. But as always, just thanks for listening, and we'll be back hopefully sometime before the end of the year. But if not, we'll talk to you guys in 2018 for Tales from the Bunk Bed. I'm Zach Hindren.
I'm Lucas.
We'll talk to you guys later.
Deck the halls with boughs of holly.
Fa la 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 la. 'Tis the season to be jolly. Fa la 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 la. Don we now our gay apparel. Fa la 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 la. True the ancient Yuletide carol. Fa la 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 la. Fa la 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 la.
We wish you a Merry Christmas.
We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Good tidings we bring to you and your king. We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
We wish you a Merry Christmas.
We wish you a Merry Christmas.
We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.